about me. I'll be fine. I just hope you find them poor kids.
If you leave, you'll die.
So how's this all gonna work then? I mean, are you supposed to ask me questions or?
Start your lines.
We're gonna play the bunny game.
You're listening to the Carnival Cast.
First of all, I just want to welcome everyone to the Conduit Megacast. And once I start introducing everyone, we'll understand why it's called the Megacast. But first, let me introduce our very special co-host for the evening from Cinema Head Cheese and Wicked Channel, Mr. James DiPaolo.
Hello.
His sweet, sweet voice. And let's go ahead and go down the line. Chris Power from Long Pigs.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, sir. How are you this evening?
Not too bad. Thanks so much, by the way, for sending that DVD to Scott Rudin.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, that was a crazy situation, huh?
Who knows? Maybe it'll come up later. But much appreciated, man. You are the conduit.
Well, I'm sure we'll delve into the joys of the distributor as a whole later on. So maybe we will touch on that. How about Mr. C.M. Downs of Fetch?
Hey there. I am here. What's going on?
Back from Hawaii.
I am, and it's freezing and snowing. 90 to 30.
Wow. And you tweaked your ankle, I heard, too.
I did yesterday. I'm not exactly sure how I did that, but better today.
Well, that's good. Keep it elevated, and we're here for you.
Pretty damn sure it's my sneakers.
you have them on the wrong feet.
That's true.
Rodling Getzik, The Bunny Game.
Hi, I'm here.
Very nice to speak to
you. Thank you, Connor.
And you've traveled with your laptop to avoid any issues?
Yes, I have. I'm in Stockton, California right now.
Very nice. Are you you already have, or will you be seeing Adam?
I will be seeing Adam. The Bunny Game's playing at the Heavy Metal Film Festival this Friday.
Yeah, April Fool's, huh?
Yeah.
Very cool. And, of course, from a film that just recently nailed down its distribution, Dawning, Mr. Greg Holtgrew.
Hello there.
Hello. Fresh off a day of basketball.
A day of basketball and Seedlings and Cotton Correction and FX.
Busy, busy, busy.
Yeah.
Nice. And someone who's recently returning back from the future, from Wound, David Blythe, who we didn't want to do this without. So thank you for making time to be with us again.
Well, thank you for holding on and allowing this to happen. Yes, I've been up north in the northern part of New Zealand trying to write a new script.
Mm. Maybe we can get into that in a bit.
Cool.
And of course, Adam Rehmeyer of the Bunny Game fame. And
this is Adam Rehmeyer, and you're listening to the Conduit Megacast.
God, I was hoping you would do that again. That's going to be the soundbite of the century right there. And I actually have a bit of another announcement to make here as I introduce Perry Teo of Necromentia fame and also working on his new film Dead Inside as we speak. Perry, are you there?
I'm here.
And much like the last time we all sat down, unfortunately Anthony from Long Pigs can't be with us tonight, but we've arranged to have another surprise special guest with us.
Yeah,
Miss Marie Lynn, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Very well. Is there anything or anyone that you would like to say hello to?
Hi, James.
Hello.
Well, that was a bit delayed, Mr. DiPaolo. Is
okay, sorry. Hello, Marie Lynn.
How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm great.
Only Yay. For you to follow. Only for you.
Yeah.
Go to hell, Perry.
What this is, I guess, what you would call a late birthday present or a really, really early Christmas present. So.
Oh, thank you, Santa.
Dude, let's do Halloween, man. Fuck.
One of the things that that we're certainly going to do is everybody here right now is really, really busy. And a lot of people are busy because they're working on upcoming projects and also on, you know, distribution deals and working on the nuts and bolts of some of the films that they're doing. And I wondered if we could start off by maybe if Greg, I'll throw the ball in your corner. Maybe you can talk about some of the experiences you're having with Dawning and getting that distribution and you know, working towards the release of that. And maybe I can get some of the other people on the panel to kind of chime in with their thoughts and experiences with distribution. So Greg, do you want to kick us off on that topic?
Sure. I mean, obviously right now it's rolling along pretty smoothly just because, you know, we've signed and everything, but, you know, obviously it was a long journey to get to the point where we had distribution. I mean, we, you know, first premiered the movie in 2008, first started getting festivals in 2009. So it was a good, you know, two and a half year process as far as even getting the film out there. So, but you know, as far right now, anyway, working with Breaking Glass, it seems to be going fine. Hard to tell, obviously, but you know, all the pieces of the puzzle are coming together as far as deliverables and just getting everything together. So it's all that, it's been kind of nice in that sense. It just feels more like just a weight is kind of off my shoulders because I've just been with the film so long, and because of the way that we raised money, there's not the same kind of stress on the film that I think a lot of other filmmakers have with the investors. So, so at this point, it just feels so good to kind of give the film to someone else and just not deal with it for after 5 years. So.
Right. And you're what level of involvement that you do have, though, you're feeling like it's a pretty collaborative process right now?
They've been open to everything. I mean, might even be to the point where we can author the DVD and create, you know, the actual menus and everything, which, so to me, it's almost like I can release it on my own just with access to certain buyers that I wouldn't, you know, ever be able to have access to. That's how it feels that so far anyway, but we'll see what happens in the next few months.
And David, you're actually kind of in between, if that's an appropriate way to call it. You've received, and earned some distribution, but you're kind of working, on the other half of that, correct?
Yes. I seem to have hit a perfect storm in America in the sense that no one wants to pay any advance. I've got two deals on the table right now from two distribution companies, but there's no advance. And then you sort of ask, well, can we speak to some of your producers? Other producers to see if they're films have actually had any overages, had any returns. And, of course, I'm still a little bit cautious and not quite sure what to do because I think as we discussed last time but now discussed right here and now, it's the VOD. It's the 3 or 4 years in the future, which I think is going to be where there is going to be some money to be made. But it seems that we're in a time where you've got to have a very, very commercial film with some real elements to break through and actually get money advanced.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, Adam, you had kind of touched on some of your views as far as the expanded role that technology is going to play in this.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's like David just said, you know, I've been figuring it's a few years out, maybe 3, 4, maybe 5 at the most. Mm-hmm. But in 5 years, I think, you know, we'll be selling stuff directly to people that want it, you know, whether it's VOD or I don't think it'll be, I think it'll all be digital files, like in another couple of years. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think everything will be digital. I think speed probably will get faster for, like, you know, acquiring stuff, mm-hmm. Big files, you know, Blu-ray files, all sorts of stuff. But yeah, I'm looking at that. I'm very cautious right now, especially with the Bunny Game, of, you know, giving rights to anyone, especially for no money up front. So I've talked with some people. There are a couple guys that are going to come take a look at the film. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm open to what people have to say, but I'm not counting on it, and I'm not counting on, you know, distributors and people that, especially in the category of, like, changing material, especially with our film, you know, we went untouched, and, like, if someone has a problem with that, we'll just find another way to sell it, you know?
Well, has that changed your Easter plan with Bunny then?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. I have some people that are coming to the screening that are going to check it out, like I said, and I'd like to just see what they think, because they have, you know, experience with, you know, kind of harder films and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. extreme films. So I'd like to see, you know, based on their opinion. I've already met with them and I trust them. So I'll just see what they think avenues might be for the film, like how realistic, and if we could do something. I'm totally open to it. I'm just, you know, apprehensive of giving away rights to something when it's so close to there kind of being a change in how films are marketed and distributed. You know?
Well, you need to be careful too, because in the past you've sometimes been accused of selling out.
Yeah, by DePaulo. Only by DePaulo.
I think, Chris, you should also talk to Chris Power about this whole distribution.
Oh, I was getting there. I was just kind of surprised to hear the silence on DePaulo's end.
I want to ask a question. Can I ask a question?
As long as it relates to Adam and selling out.
Oh, no, it relates to Greg.
Go ahead, sir. Sure.
With Breaking Glass, in the last, say, 3 months, they have shied away from the horror genre so much. Are you scared your movie's going to get lost?
Not really, just because I think just the type of film that it is, it's number one, I think it's going to go more along the lines of psychological thriller than horror. Mm-hmm. And it just, they might be shying away from horror probably for, in some ways, all the reasons that they probably chose to go with Dawning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a tried and true formula that's, you know, gotten a little bit stale and boring. And so people are tending to shy away from it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not, you know, again, you know, am I worried about it? It's like, I don't know. I just want to move forward. I mean, I'm not, this movie's not the end all be all. It's not the, you know, it's not the only thing. So,
well, it's a
to
start
me, just,
all, you know, get all.
What's that?
For your film, it's basically the start all, become all.
Because
if you can't start with your movie, I mean, you know, it's going to be hard for the second movie.
Here's my thing, though. It's like, I feel like, you know, Greg, I know it's one thing to go, yeah, you know what, I want to get rid of it. It's been 5 years in the making. But have you ever considered the depression that was set in once it's actually handed over? Because, you know, I feel that. I feel that, you know, I'm excited. I get everything done, deliverables and all that. But once I hand it in and I turn around and walk away, there is a certain sense of, like, depression. Like, where do I go from here kind of feeling? It's like a marriage kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I've just been with this film so long. I mean, first shooting it in 2004 and having shot so many versions and scrapping a whole shoot from 2006 and everything else, that I've kind of gone through an emotional process with it, that just for me, and having made two other features and
I just don't, I try not to take that emotional connection with it because the film is my emotional connection. The final vision of the film, the thing that you see. So beyond that, there are so many variables and it has so much to do with people who are in power and money that, you know, my dad always told me, choose my battles wisely, and making a feature film is hard enough. I don't think I can change the distribution world. I don't think I can change Hollywood. All I can do is just try and make another film. So
you would say that, and not to put words into your mouth, but this is kind of a step to building your catalog then.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, okay, on worst case scenario, the investors don't make their money back. And like I said, for me, because of the investment situation, it's not as crucial and really doesn't even have anything to do with me making another film. It was kind of this once in a kind of a blue moon moment. Mm-hmm. And so for me, more importantly is to show that Donnie can make money, that I can make money, that there is a certain demand for my film, create an audience, and then hopefully use that to make my next film and hopefully make it even cheaper than what I did with Donnie. You know, like try and almost to, yeah, I don't know. That anyway, that's my point.
Well, and, okay, so I want to get to CM Downs. I want to get to you on this subject as well, but I want to talk to Chris Power first because you're kind of in a situation where you're in a different stage when it comes to Long Pigs. You know, you'd secured your distribution, it's out there, and now you're in a unique position where there's rumblings of a Long Pigs 2. I'm sure there's other scripts that you're working on and things like that. Where are you at in terms of moving on from that project or letting go of that project, if at all?
Well, I mean, in terms of letting go of the project, the movie's made, it's out there. I, you know, the responsibility I feel is just to the fans who are interested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to, you know, have connection with them because that's really been the best part of making this whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Long Pigs 2, we're looking at doing with, you know, a major star, so it's basically a completely different animal. It's a type of thing where the distribution is going to be, you know, guaranteed and secured before, you know, we go to day one, right?
Mm.
It's basically like most movies are done, right? It's going to be, you know, a union film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a whole other story. But basically, you know, I feel and relate to, you know, a lot of the guys who are talking now. You know, like Greg's just getting his film out there and, you know, there's lots of small companies now. I mean, let's face it, there's a glut of films out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it's no longer, you know, the world it was 20 years ago, where if you just had a film finished, then you could get even just people to see it. I mean, there are literally, we've probably seen them, you know, there's desks with like stacks of DVDs 50 high.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And people are looking at this stuff. But distribution is, you know, I guess it really comes down to what you actually expect from it. And if you expect to get, you know, rich, especially if it's your first sort of DI, you know, do-it-yourself film,
mm-hmm.
with no stars. I mean, I can't count how many times I've been at a festival and people are like, great movie,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Or I've heard good things about it. Who's in it?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, this guy, my, you know, guy, mm-hmm. and some other people mm-hmm. in the cast. And, you know, they just sort of say, uh-huh.
What is the obsession with name rather than performance or content? I mean, is that wall ever going to be broken down?
Well, I think, you know, you can certainly see, you know, people make a case and say, hey, look at Star Trek by J.J. Abrams, and
mm-hmm.
that didn't have any names in it, and, you know, sure, but it's Star Trek.
Right, it's a property.
J.J. Abrams, well, J.J. Abrams is the name, too,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's getting just as many people in there as Star Trek fans,
mm-hmm.
but, and by the way, I didn't even mind the movie,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's distribution at this level is, I don't think, you know, David was talking about trying to get an advance, and we were there too, you know, where we had, you know, 9-10 offers that were all no money down and various forms of splits
mm-hmm.
and deals and stuff like that. And that's, I guess, the model just because, you know, the days of the Weinsteins in the 90s and, you know, these bidding wars, you know, $10 million for some, you know, movie that nobody's ever heard of are really, they're not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So for guys like us that are basically slinging it out in a genre, you know, I really do hope that there is a way that we can go direct marketing down the road, but I have a feeling it's going to be kind of a little bit of a hybrid, and, you know, they're already talking about a two-way internet where they're going to have control and all kinds of other things.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what the future brings, but, you know, thank God for hardcore horror fans because they actually find us out and do search you out.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, when you're doing so much of the promotion and the legwork yourself, why not just sell the DVD on your own? Like,
believe me, man, I wish I could have done that right from the start. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've... You know, it's hard for me to listen to, you know, the distributor tell me the DVD market is dead, and then I, you know, as a joke, put up like 20 signed DVDs with the jerky combos, and the first batch went in 6 hours.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I was like, okay, and I put up some more. And then 24 hours later, they were gone. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you do the legwork, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, and Facebook and all the social networks are a big part of that,
mm-hmm.
There are the fans out there, but... You know, the hard part is you know, everybody else is cutting down their, you know, DVD rack space as well, right? Nobody's stocking DVDs.
But so, I mean, when we're talking about Long Pigs too, I mean, the only way you're going to get this made is if, you know, you get Anthony McAllister in there and bring in Danny DeVito or something and do like a Twins type of film. And,
you know what? I hadn't thought of him, but you're not far off.
I mean, that, you know, that's a name that guarantees you... you know, to at least take your opening weekend.
And he's so cute.
He is. He's yeah. borderline cuddly.
To be honest with you, that's the idea. You know, you get a star for, you know, a week, mm-hmm. and you shoot a bunch of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and then you shoot the movie around it, and the movie's written that way. It's, you know, I think it's you know, a cool idea, but, you know, coming from some guy who's worked on a million MOWs, this is the way movies get made. Yeah.
Well, couldn't you kind of flip it on its head and, like, you know, do that cheesy kind of, you know, this is our headliner, but, you know, we had him on set for 3 days, but almost kind of make a mockery of it within the film, do it satirically?
Well, you know, hey, not to spoil the whole movie, but the idea, one of the plot threads, anyways, aside from crazy Facebook fans, mm-hmm. to Paulo, there are... you know, basically it's they're, you know, doing a big budget version,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, and sort of they've got this A-list star, and a lot of it's sort of the you know, behind the scenes, you know,
mm-hmm.
as they're making this movie. So that's where we get this guy in, and he's meeting Anthony in jail and all this other sort of stuff.
Mm.
And of course a twist ending with lots of violence and blood and
it would kill if you could get Jodie Foster to come visit Anthony in jail.
I don't know. She scares me more than Hannibal Lecter.
Well, then get Julianne Moore. She played Clarice. let's get Chris in here before we move on. CM Downs, you're in a different place, another kind of phase of the distribution, huh?
Yeah, we just, you know, a lot of interesting things going on. You know, it's like everybody else is saying here. I mean, nobody wants to do like a, you know, MG up front unless you have the cast that supports it.
Right.
But actually, a slight turn of events since the last time I talked to you. Our sales agents from Artstone and Michael Laurie and Jeffrey Gills and those guys is inked. So we're moving forward with that and working with Travis Stevens at Snowfort and those guys. And things might actually turn around, so this could be good.
Awesome. We'll give you a cautious congratulations right now, then.
Yeah, that would be good. Everything is inked, but, you know, hey. And it's done until it's done. So.
Well, it's but, all the people that we're talking to today and all these films just scream to be seen. There's not one person here that, you know, and James can echo this sentiment as well. They're just films that we're all so passionate about and want so desperately for more people to be able to see.
Yeah, I mean, my crew telling, you know, we joke around, it's the fetch curse, you know, because anything and everything that could possibly go wrong, you know, did, you know, first day of principal photography, it's -16 below zero and 6 feet of snow in Kansas. I mean, which is, hasn't happened in 20 years.
Which was funny, too, because when I was talking to you about Fetch after I watched it the first time, was like, I didn't even, call me ignorant, but I didn't even realize you got that kind of snow there.
Hey, before I moved here, I thought they still had cowboy and Indian problems, so not too far. You know, but, yeah, so, I mean, you know, everything's going fine. I'm working on a bunch of other stuff, and we just shot a piece that a couple studios want to see. For me, the next film, you know, it's all about the cast, mm-hmm. you know, obviously the script, and trying to have everything lined up correct. I mean, it's just so hard to do it this way, and, you know, you just keep on, you can't stop, you just keep going, so that's all I got.
That's all you got. All right.
Gotta be a trooper if you want to do this. That's all I know. I commend everybody on this show.
I don't know, honestly, how, and maybe, you know, we can segue from this because I want to get Rod Lean in here, but I don't know how at certain points you keep going unless you are genuinely, of the mindset that there's nothing else that I want to do or can do or need to do.
I have the motto, Chris, that I'm French, which means I'm too dumb to quit. So I run with that one.
Aye. Rodlene, you still there?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about while all this was being talked about, just about selling, you know, selling art and what we create. And for me, I mean, I'm an artist for years now, and, you know, as a musician and now an actress. And it's like, for me, like, I can't stop creating. I just keep doing it. And I guess I'm not really thinking about the avenues of, like, how I'm going to create money, because it just happens. Like, money loves me. So, mm-hmm. So I'm blessed by, you know, survival, and I don't need much, but I just want to just keep creating art.
Well, how about this? Let's, because one of the things that has come into question, recently with some of the technological, pseudo disasters that have, come onto me is, you know, we talked about the Fetch curse, and, There's quite some time where we were talking about the curse of the bunny game, or the negative energy that came along with that. And, yeah. I've started to, choose to kind of focus on the positive, energy from you and Adam that actually was injected into the creation of the bunny game, rather than the evil that, that became of the narrative. And,
Yeah, the bunny game is dark and light. It has, you know, shadow and light in it. And it does have a power to it that can be a curse, as we've seen, like, digitally, mm-hmm. at least.
Yeah, and so, with, like, Renfro camping out on my deck.
That's so sexy. That's so sexy.
Without pants.
So sexy. Hey, Radline has seen him in the Radline's seen him in the cod piece.
Oh no. And here's where I want to go with this, because Marie, I want to get you in on here, okay? Hello?
Yeah.
Marie and I had talked quite a while back on a show that I had her on, and one of the topics that we kind of addressed and touched on was sort of the female role in film in general, society, but especially in genre film. Now, Rod, you were, this was an all or nothing situation with you and the bunny game in terms of physically, emotionally, and spiritually kind of giving yourself up to the piece.
Definitely did that.
And, you know, across the board, genre films in general, and horror films in particular, you can sometimes think in your mind or stereotype what the female's role in that is going to be, you know, naked, ditzy, slutty, whatever, you know, stereotype you want to throw them into. But with a film like The Bunny Game, you have Wound, you have Fetch that all, dabble really heavily in, you know, gender specific areas, namely dealing with women in particular. And I wonder if we can kind of get Rodline and Marie here talking about, you know, kind of how you feel, you know, working within a genre. Rodline, you were certainly in a vulnerable and very aggressive situation with the Bunny Game. And do you feel different? Do you feel like, you know, an outsider when you're working within the genre? Do you feel like an object?
Well, I was during the Bunny Game. I mean, I was meditating. I prepared for that, you know, for weeks. I fasted for 40 days prior to filming, and I took it as like a very serious piece of art that we were doing. Mm-hmm. So, the piece is cathartic for me. It was cathartic, and I think it's cathartic for anyone who is open to that. But it was definitely cathartic for me, you know. And I handled it like an extreme sport, all the brutality and the action.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and how about you, Marie? Because I want to get James in on this because James watches far more films than I do. James is really someone who really embraces genre film and also all different types of subgenres. And I know, James, you've been able to kind of experience, you know, women in genre film in a variety of different ways. Can I get you and Marie maybe talking about that?
What do you want to talk about? Go ahead.
Well, I want to hear, you know, we have women in roles like Rodline plays that are so extreme and abusive in the way that they're portrayed. We have, you know, women in the genre in Wound with David who, you know, there's so many different emotions and experiences that you go through. And then...
Like Taiki.
and then, you know, James, you and I were talking about, what is it? Burlesque Massacre?
Burlesque Massacre.
You know, and Marie and I have kind of talked about that, on our own. Mm-hmm. Right, Marie?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And, I'm not a big, boobs, blood and gore or however it is guy. You know, James had asked me if I had seen it or wanted to see it, and I kind of told him politely that it wasn't really my thing. I,
very interesting movie.
Yeah, well, I want to, since Marie's here, I want to get Marie to talk about, you know, what propels you to get involved in a piece like that.
Oh, my goodness.
Marie, you know me by now. You know you're not going to get on and not be put on the spot.
You're an alien.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Because there's a difference between the way Rodline's.
Gosh, I wish I've seen. I wish I would. I actually plan on going to this premiere coming this Friday. Yeah, I'm very curious to see this film.
Well, let's just say that the way Rodline's character is exposed during the film is you'd have to be pretty sick to find it titillating. To say the least. But, you know, you have been involved in situations and films where the focus of the you know, female characters was their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to get a little three-way going here with James, Rodline, and Marie to talk about these types of films.
That's okay. A quote. That's a quote.
We're gonna sell the show to minors.
Breathe, James. Oh, breathe.
But I mean, on Burlesque Massacre, honest, which I watched. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, I was gonna talk about my role in Burlesque Massacre. I didn't really have that kind of role.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of just kind of a role to propel the story along. I really was not subjected to much sexualization, I guess.
How about let's talk about Friday the 13th, The Storm?
Oh.
That's awesome.
Was that used to propel the story forward?
No. No.
How awful.
Okay, so what's your question exactly?
I want to get the Marie, you're making this much too hard, dear. I want to get the alternating opinions of a young up-and-coming actress as yourself, Marie, and a young actress such as Rodleen, who mm-hmm. have portrayed two very different types of female genre stereotypes, if you will.
Wow. Okay.
Talk about what you did, what your role was in Friday the 13th, The Storm.
In Friday the 13th, The Storm, I play a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
I kiss a girl, and I end up dying mm-hmm. shortly
Can you
thereafter.
Go slower. Go slower.
I'm downloading it now.
I'm on a beach in a bikini. It's a beautiful, bright day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, as an actress, honestly, doing a role like that is it's good experience. It's good to get out there,
but it's
in that way.
It's, you're not saying though that it's a resume builder. It's more for your own personal practice, if you will.
Boyfriend builder.
No, I'm saying it's a resume builder.
You are saying that.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the intention behind it. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly a role that a lot of girls particularly want to portray.
Mm-hmm.
but stop laughing.
You guys are distracting her, man.
Oh my god.
What is going on over there? What's going on, guys?
Orange chicken.
I did not think this answer would take 20 minutes.
I'm so sorry. I really am.
Start from the beginning.
She just got 10,000 requests on her Facebook page.
Yeah, right.
Counting.
Like I said before, it's a good experience. It's a good way to get to show people that you are willing to kind of step outside the normal boundaries of a typical actress, or, you know, that you are willing to handle putting yourself in situations that maybe you normally wouldn't be putting yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of shows an actress's strength, really, honestly. It shows your mental stability that you can handle a role like that and come out of it. The role that I had in Friday the 13th wasn't necessarily a taxing role. It definitely was outside of who I am personally, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what we have, this wonderful actress, what she did in her movie, but it sounds pretty gruesome.
Mm.
And,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, we are actors for a reason. We definitely pursue the passion of it, and we like to portray other things.
Mm-hmm.
We like to step outside of ourselves and experience these different things, even if it is a very tough thing to do. that's basically what I have to say as
mm-hmm.
far as I can.
No, and that, again, I just kind of wanted to get your perspective on that. And, you know, I'm curious to hear, you know, maybe even David talk about this, because David, you know, Wound is a film that just deals, you know, within that realm of the human psyche, but also in particular, the, you know, a feeling and a chemistry that only involves a woman when you talk about, that maternal instinct. And that's a theme that, kind of wove itself very heavily into Wound is that maternal, intrinsic maternal instinct that comes with only being a woman.
Yes, well, it was the Greek myth that I'd sort of gone back to, the Demeter and Persephone myth of the mother and the daughter, and I was fascinated by all that. But But in my case, I was very lucky to find the actress Kate O'Rourke for Wound, because we really had, we got to a point where we really understood each other, and she trusted me, and really it was a sympathetic look at someone who had been really mistreated by society and by her own family. So I felt that that, you know, while we were certainly pushing a whole bunch of taboos, it was done in a way that I certainly am. I have no misgivings about.
You don't worry about, well, obviously you don't, because you can't. The type of films that you create, there's a little film going around online called Waldo the Dog. That was it, right, James?
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah, well, yeah. Regardless of that, the funny thing was that James and I were talking about this label that had been attached to Waldo to kind of entice people, and it was labeled with this guerrilla filmmaking title. And I, you know, I wrote my review and threw up examples of Long Pigs and Wound and The Bunny Game as three prime examples of, you know, if you're going to slap that moniker on anything, those are the types of films. You know, when you talk about David, that it just felt right, it felt natural. You still, you know, that guerrilla filmmaking style is a natural thing if it's gonna be done properly. Correct? I mean, it can't be forced.
No, I think it's got to come from a deeper place, and you know, Wound is very layered. It's got a lot of different layers to it. They weren't just all thrown together, as a number of reviewers, none of which are on this program, have said, but certainly there's been people that have just said, you know, I've just gone out for every taboo I could find, but they all are linked, because I was fascinated by the horror within the everyday, and throughout my filmmaking career, I've actually had focused a lot on female leads and disenfranchised women. Often, but there are, you know, there are other areas of the genre that, you know, I would be definitely a lot more uncomfortable about, and in a way, that's why I've tried to move away from what you know we were calling the old man American horror genre, sort of a style, if you like. I really wanted to search for a new place to mine, if you like, within the horror genre. And I think it's what's going on around us.
Well, what's that old man American type of horror? Cause that's something that you're segueing nicely into, is I really want to get into that evil of man, the man's inhumanity to man, that type of horror where the stuff that really, you know, scares me, the real life stuff. But what is it that you as a New Zealander, are referring to when you say the old man American horror? Are we talking like, you know, the standard slasher film, things like that?
All the sort of the sort of Friday the 13th type stuff.
Right.
Nightmare. The fact that all these sort of franchises have just, they've sort of gone on or been reborn in various other guises. Mm-hmm. But isn't it interesting that a lot of the interesting horror films are actually coming from Sweden, Europe, and those directors are now actually working in Hollywood, some of them.
Well, I guess it's that different, a different sensibility. It always fascinates me when I watch, you know, whether it's a French film, a Korean film, you know, whatever. The things that really excite me and I think are neat are some of the societal differences and the subtle things that to them, you know, they're making a film, and it's not quote unquote different, but that kind of immerses me in it. And you get, you know, a film like Fetch that I've always kind of trumpeted as the best European genre film not made by a European, although, you know, CM, you do have French roots.
It's true.
but that sensibility and with you just, David, with you kind of clarifying that old man American horror, you look at the people on this panel and I think, you know.
We will represent new wave. That's what I was about to get
okay.
to, is that, yeah, the people here on this panel are the new wave, and there's still the fact that the distributors are lagging behind and that they're still fixated on those old man style horror films.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually, they won't even have the Mexican boy down in the phone room listening to the blog. they haven't got to that yet, you know what I mean? The distributors in America are still actually probably not linked up enough with the internet to see what the future's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I agree completely with that.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
Sorry about the American reference, but it couldn't help.
No, I mean, I'll be the first to say that, you know, and I'm certainly not gonna get political here, but I'll be the first to say that I am, first and foremost, wouldn't be all that anxious to step forward in a lineup and proclaim myself an American at this point.
Well, no, we're not getting critical of America. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting that there, it's not just the fact that we're in a recession there and that we're changing to a new digital technology. There's a distributor lag in that they haven't actually quite caught up with where it's actually happening, which is right here now. And situations like what you're doing, and it's like that other horror blog lot, Bloody Disgusting, doing their own deal with AMC. You know, that's what I consider a very clever crossover.
Mm-hmm. These guys are so scared about the future. That, like, I've been in meetings with these guys, and they saw what happened to the music industry. They're so terrified. I mean, the industry is so fucked up right now that actually they're not even – I mean, if you're producing a movie in California, you don't even get your tax credits. You get a voucher because California's broke.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like they don't – you know, things are running around. They don't know where the revenue streams are. They're still trying to figure out, you know, how they try to make money consistently off the internet without, you know, getting ripped off. It's a kind of a weird transition period, certainly, that we're in. Like, I'm sure in 10 years there'll be a model that everybody says, well, that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly nobody can give me a clear answer. They say it might be this, it might be that. You know, it's certainly they know it's going to be digital and some sort of online, like a pull system instead of a push, where they're just putting it out to people. They're going to be people who are requesting stuff. But
yeah, and one of the big problems online. One of the big problems online is how do you get everybody to come to the same spot to actually, you know, rent, download, whatever from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gatekeeper days are basically blown at this point. So,
well, what about this whole create space thing over at Amazon where people? I know Perry, I got a disc of your shorts from Amazon, and it's done through that kind of on demand service where, you know, you order it, they produce it, and send it out.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if that's kind of, you know, going in that direction where there is, like when you say, where do you go, that's a central location?
I think essentially what happens is that if you are going to go through that channel, you're going to have to be prepared to do a lot of marketing on your own right. You're going to have to act as a distributor for however long you want to promote your film. Mm-hmm. And you know, you literally have to, dare I say it, step out of the boundaries of being a film director and almost take on a role as a distributor or a producer, if you may say it. So it is a really, really tricky avenue in a sense that, you know, hearing everybody right now in the podcast is, you know, we're all filmmakers and we don't want to spend the rest of our life just showing one particular work.
Mm-hmm.
And while it is an avenue you can explore, my only advice is just be prepared to really market your thing and devote a lot of time into it. So
was that more a sense for you? Was just more about for the fans making that available to people? That
yeah, for me, I just put it out there. I just it really didn't matter to me whether it made any money or or anything like that. Mm-hmm. For me, it's kind of like the minimum cost was this much, and I say, okay, that's the minimum cost. I just put it out there. Mm-hmm. You guys want it? You guys can see it. That's how I know you can see mm-hmm. it. And I try. And the only reason why I put it, say, over there versus YouTube is, because I try to include in the features as well a little bit of my thought process while making the mm-hmm. films, something that I couldn't do on YouTube and things like that. So that's the only reason why I put it up there.
Yo, Conduit.
Yo. Yo.
I think with all this oversaturation, like directly reaching out to fans and people is going to be the way. I think it's going to just become part of the job for filmmakers because the technology has, as far as cameras and editing mm-hmm. go, even lights now, mm-hmm. the new like LCD lights. I mean, you can have battery powered lights and stuff now that look great mm-hmm. and you can just be so mobile and on the move. The technology has changed so much in 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. I was cutting on a Steenbeck 10 years ago,
right?
Flatbed editor. And now, Final Cut and where digital cameras are, mm-hmm. the technology and the mobility of them. Like, back in the day you had a Mitchell camera package that probably weighed, more than 2 men. Mm-hmm. Now you can have everything on your back and, be run and gun. And, if you can keep your overheads low enough with the quality lenses and the quality cameras that we have available and the technology, you can pretty much do everything yourself. I think it's going to really shift that way to like self-promoting your own films and, getting like social media. It just looks like it's going to be that way. Mm. I put my money on it and I'm going to keep doing it that way.
You know what? I think might start happening too is, well, the thing is we have to face it that kids who are liking the films, they're going to trade the films digitally. I mean, that's just what they do now with MP3s and audio. I don't know, just they do it on those sites. And I was thinking that maybe the future of film might incorporate having more and more corporate sponsors or business sponsors in the film. Because really like trading films, I don't think it's going to stop.
So wait, you're like talking like a Mac in me where everybody's drinking Pepsi and eating Doritos or, like.
Exactly, exactly.
Hmm, that's kind of interesting. I don't know.
Well, the Doritos massacre.
our anarchistic filmmaking.
Well, see, the piracy issue's been there forever. I mean, it started with the records and it went to 8-tracks, It's been there forever. We taped off the radio to cassette. Mm-hmm. I mean, piracy is always going to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
What are you, DePaulo, like 65 years old? Holy shit, you're talking
80.
About...
I remember back in the day.
Yeah, I remember Paul Anka.
Definitely on the indie level, it's, marketing is huge, right? It's like, how do you get this film out to people so they know it's there? And then that cycle starts for, every 10 people that know about it, they tell one person, and then that, it keeps incrementing from there.
That's the thing with piracy too, obviously. Like, I mean, at this point, I think you have to sort of embrace it, at least at the level we're at. I go on the torrent sites and leave comments. If I see 25 comments about my movie, I go on there and say, hey, thanks for watching. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, what else are you going to do, quite frankly, except just go on there and say, hey,
You'll be a scabby, crabby old man shaking his fist at the sky and cursing God.
I don't want James DePaulo.
Well, and if you give a package, if you give like a really cool package, to your fans, like what somebody was just talking about, the beef jerky or something.
Yeah, Chris with Long Pigs.
Right, with Long Pigs. Yeah, so yeah, you give out some special package to the fans, and then they're gonna want to buy the product.
Well, I still wear my hawk mask to bed that I got from Adam in my Bunny Game package.
Wow.
But
I don't know, Chris. I know a lot of people. Out there as part of it. And with the thank God for you guys, James. Eventually they'll buy it if it's good. It's and the people who won't buy it is because they're never even going to watch it in the first place. So
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think it's actually, you know, in a weird way, part of the advertising process. Like, I know some producers who are actually gun-shy about Netflix because they say, well, once it's out there, then you lose a bunch of people who are going to buy the film. And I say it's exactly the opposite, that I'm more likely to discover something on Netflix and then go look at it, especially if it's got good features.
Right.
If it's got a director's commentary, I'm buying it.
The good thing is that because we're making horror films as well, most of our, you know, scenes tend to be really dark. So whether you're going by Netflix or, you know, parodying, you know, under some compression, a lot of the, you know, blacks will come out very blocky.
Sure.
If they really want to see a good quality movie, they're going to, you know, have to go, which if it's good, they will. You know, compared to like a comedy where everything is crystal clear and piracy. So I think we have the edge and the, we're ahead in that sense. That is, if we don't film, you know, our horror movies in like Rainbow Brightland or something.
Well, I know Perry. I know Necromentia. You know, you hit the red box when the DVD came out. Chris, Long Pigs is still, you know, not available on Netflix. Perry, is Necro available on Netflix yet? I don't think it is it?
I have no ideas. I don't look it up, honestly.
But Chris, I mean, you've known that about Long Pigs, right? It's just kind of out there in the vapor.
Well, yeah, I mean, let me start again. For instance, like Amazon On Demand, we were turned down because of content. Now, at the same time, in Canada, we didn't even get an R rating. Mm. Right? So that tells you how screwed up the standards are. Mm-hmm. You know, people sent it, it's a tough movie to, you know, even just based on the title to sell. Like, we don't do well on a list. Let's say that. You know what I mean? We do well because there's so many fans talking about, you know, how good it is. But it takes a pretty ballsy executive to take a flyer on this. I can't tell you how many times we've gotten up the ladder of, you know, a major, you know, film company, distribution company, and some VP is saying, I'm going to champion this film. And then all of a sudden there's the meeting with the president, and then it's like, sorry. I mean, he basically flipped out and threw the DVD out the window.
Right.
I mean, I've lost editing jobs that were even non-related because some, you know, producer got a hold of this because I showed it to a PA. He liked it and showed it to the producer. And suddenly I was fired.
Oh, my God.
No good reason. So, anyways, getting on Netflix, that's sort of a pipe dream, and I figured it'll come down the road, and in the meantime, I'm going to embrace the torrent sites.
But I just don't understand that, because some of the horror and genre films on Netflix are just, oh my God, like, how do they get on?
Yeah, and that's...
It's a pipeline. All it is a pipeline, Chris. What happens is, you have all those bigger films, you know, by the bigger companies, right? Let's say Lionsgate. And they're selling, say, Expendables. And what happens is, as they're selling Expendables, they're also saying, but you have to buy these other ones if you want Expendables. You know, you buy them at a cheaper price, and then what they do is they throw it out in the market and put it on the shelves and pray and hope that something comes out of it. That's how it works.
Oh, I know, and unfortunately, I think almost the reverse is the truth in our case, and that, you know, we're trying to be – they're putting pressure where people want our film, and they say, unless you take these 10 other films that are garbage, then we won't give it to you, so we end up losing the deal. Now, you know, that's the worst-case scenario, but that's evidence I've just gotten recently. So I understand that's how it works. It all works in volume, and we have to be very cynical. It's not really about the individual film anymore, except when it comes to selling, like, the signed copies on eBay, I guess.
I have a Netflix story. Wound, after the Montreal Fantasia Festival, suddenly appeared on the next Netflix site in America.
Really?
And what they were basically doing was seeing the poster, was seeing if their punters were clicking it enough to even come and approach us. So without any permission, they put the poster of the film up on Netflix.
Wow.
To just to gauge if what sort of interest was there, I would guess.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, see, I mean, this is interesting because I'm a Netflix subscriber, but I don't really know like what goes into getting some of the garbage up there that's up there. You know, why...
Oh, so Netflix, any movie can get up there, honestly. Netflix is all about quantity, not quality. I can guarantee you that.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's...
Like, honestly, for me, like, I think Redbox is more... I may be biased, but I think it's more quality just because they can only fill so many slots in there.
Well, sure, they're going
to
want...
At a given time, yeah. Compared to, say, you know, Netflix, where they can throw in as much as they can. Mm-hmm. And they're attracting subscribers because of the huge amounts of database that they
absolutely
have. You know, bigger than Blockbuster and all mm-hmm. that. And that's why Blockbuster is losing money.
Yeah, I think Netflix is more about the quantity of their library than it is about the convenience, whereas Redbox is more about the convenience than it is the quantity of their library.
Yeah, see, right. One of the things that's really got me lately is, you know, I like to rent movies that have behind the scenes. I mean, I love it, you mm-hmm. know. And now if you go rent a flick, especially a studio film, it says, you must buy the DVD to get the behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. It's like, I just rented the fucking thing I want to watch.
Right.
You know, so I'm a little pissed off by that, but, I mean, that's one of their new angles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was pissed when I rented Mean Girls from Netflix that I couldn't see the behind the scenes stuff from that.
Yeah, it really irritated. In fact, that irritated.
Is that why you stopped taking my calls?
one of 17 reasons.
Yeah, I haven't been renting that many movies lately. It's just like it just really pissed me off. Unless it's an indie flick, then it's not getting my attention lately.
Right. Well, here, keep going, James. You there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm with
okay, you've gone from being co-host to host. I have a potty emergency. No, I did not shit my pants, but I'm gonna step away for a minute and let James navigate and mediate here.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
If it bleeds, it's good.
I'll be sure to take my phone in with me if I need to take pictures.
Facebook picture.
So keep going. I don't know if we want to stay on this Netflix thing or kind of go into.
Oh, I got some topics to talk about. Don't worry. Go do your little squatting.
Okay, I'm squatting.
Cannibalism while you're gone.
I'll be back.
All right. I guess we're still talking about Netflix. So who wants to talk about that bullshit?
No, let's move on.
Well, let's see. What about festivals? What do you guys feel about the festivals right now for horror? Do you think they're bullshit or are they cool?
I think festivals are great to go there, have fun, get drunk, meet people. But in terms of a business venture, getting distributors, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it takes way too much. A lot needs to happen. A lot of luck needs to happen in order for, you know, the idea that you're going to get distribution and festival to take place. So, yeah, if you're going there to have fun, you know, meet fans and all that, that's great.
I'm really excited for our horror film playing this Friday. I haven't seen it yet on a big screen, and so I'm just so stoked that it's playing at the Heavy Metal Film Festival.
There is
right,
one question I want to ask everybody.
Rich off of it, you know. You just want to go there and have fun and just, you know, be happy you did a great job, and that's the main thing.
Well, there's one question I want everybody to answer. We're going to start off with Chris Power all the way across. What is the first horror movie that ever inspired you to do this?
Actually, Poltergeist had a huge effect on me, the first one. I lived in a suburban neighborhood with a tree right outside and a younger sister and all that sort of stuff. And it was the first horror movie that really related to me directly, as opposed to something like The Thing, which took place in the Antarctic or space aliens and stuff.
All right, Piri, your turn.
Oh, what? I'm always last. The Shining.
I guess Marie Lynn's next if she's done talking about kissing the chick.
Excuse me? Gosh, I've just always loved horror films. All of them that I've ever seen have just...
Name one. Name one movie.
Okay, well, honestly, one movie that really brought me into it was the fact that I was in Amityville Horror, the remake. Just being there, being on set and everything, it was just amazing in every way, and I was just sold from that moment on that this is exactly what I want to do. It was years and years ago, and it definitely sold me, but prior to that, as far as watching any films or anything, it was, I mean, I just loved horror films in general, and I honestly cannot pick out a single one that would have that
effect.
All right, David.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Toe Pooper Kim Henkel.
Nice.
Good one.
Adam?
For me, probably Eraserhead really got me. So I'd say when I saw Eraserhead, it got the wheels spinning.
Greg?
The Exorcist and Halloween for me.
CM Downs.
Chud.
Yes. Love Chud.
Halloween.
Well, the film that really affected me in a horrific way was The Muppet Show, the movie, when I was 4 years old. When I was 4 years old, we watched a lot of films in the drive-in theater, and that one really, it really scared me when Mrs. Piggy got abducted, and Doc was, like, holding her hostage. And, like, it just, like, ingrained into my brain, like, oh, my God, like, what would happen if he kept her? What would he do to her? And, like, so that scared me so bad when I was little. And I held on to that, and I think I released that into the bunny game.
Yeah, it could have been called the piggy serious. Game.
She is very serious, fans.
You know, Jeff is Hog. He's Hog. The Hog Show.
Well, Beaker. I'm assuming, James, where you had gone with this was kind of asking everybody, you know, where this all started for them.
Yeah, what movie inspired them?
Is it possible to think that many of the people we have on this show right now will be the inspiration for future genre filmmakers?
Yeah, Bro-S Massacre.
Ba-dum-bum. No comment, Marie.
What? Sorry, what?
But I can kind of imagine, you know,
the flashbacks.
What about for Last Masker? I missed it.
Like a bunny game, or, you know, a wound, dawning. Any of these films, you know, being
that's good, dude.
being very very inspirational.
It is good. It's a good movie.
Very
like
plenty of jokes.
I can see how all these movies would hopefully inspire people to go up and pick up a camera because, you know, as we've already said, it's getting cheaper and
Massacre.
Cheaper.
Exactly. I'm inspired to go have sex in the bathroom.
That just means it's Tuesday, yeah.
It's Tuesday, wait, what? Okay, James, throw out another topic. You said you had a bunch of topics.
I want to talk about something we never talked about before, and it's with Chris Power. We're talking about women in film, but we never described Lucy the prostitute and what she had to go through.
Well, you know, you were talking about, you know, there's two roles, you know, traditionally, I guess, in horror, you know, and one is the sort of strong sort of Jamie Lee Curtis, Ripley type character, you know, the strong female, and the other one is... sometimes the victim. And I have to say that, you know, we get so many questions about our special effects and how we did it, and really half of the selling is the fact that we basically got, you know, a larger prostitute, you know, basically, not a real prostitute, but a larger actress to play a prostitute and hang upside down, naked, which was an amazing gift. And, you know, it's difficult as a director to ask somebody to do something that you would never do yourself. You know, I wouldn't even take my shirt off in public, much less do that stuff. But, you know, she gave us an amazing gift. And, it's all detailed on the DVD, but, you know, it's, she really gave us an amazing gift and really sold our special effects by, being willing to be so vulnerable and playing the victim in that other traditional sense.
Well, how did that conversation go?
To be honest with you, it's funny because she was our second choice. So we ended up first conversation saying, thanks so much. You were great, but we're going with this other actress. She, you know, promptly pulled her knee or something like that, you know, after she had had the first body cast.
Mm-hmm.
We had to call her back. And at that point, she was, you know, a little wary about the nudity. We sat her down and said, listen, you know, here's what we're doing. This, I mean, she didn't even know if this was a porno, right? I mean, we're just a couple of dudes trying to make something, asking her to get naked, step into this goo, you know what I mean? But
sounds like going to Perry's Friday nights.
There you go. So, anyway, she was a trooper and really...
Saturday.
Sorry.
At the end of the day, you know, we ended up having some problems with our special effects. She ended up coming back three separate occasions and getting strung up upside down by her ankles.
Mm.
And was just, you know, an incredible trooper, for, you know, a role that really wasn't glamorous. She didn't have the big payoff at the end. She basically gets hit in the head with a sledgehammer and that's it. You know what I mean? It was an amazing gift and I can't say enough about Barb. We love you.
And to be honest with you, Chris, I know you saw what I wrote about your film and you and Nathan in particular, but my God, the special effects work, especially in that quartering scene, we certainly want to give a lot of respect to the gentleman who made that possible in other ways too.
Yeah. Chris Bridges, who, you know, we basically, you know, there's a long saga. We, you know, went with a young guy who was gung-ho, but basically, you know, was a little bit in over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, on the day that I saw the corpse that he delivered, I mean, it looked like a baked ham.
Mm.
And I was thinking, oh, my God, can I shoot this silhouette? Like, how am I going to do this thing? And we basically were out of money. We went in, you know, on our knees to this guy. And, you know, this is a guy who, you know, he was working on 300 at the same time he was working on Long Pants, you know, building the tree of, you know, he's worked with M. Night.
Dawn of the Dead, the remake.
Sure. I mean, he was just working on The Thing remake and showed me some sweet on-set pictures, by the way. That movie's going to be boss. But anyways, the guy's a genius and really was fearless, you know. That whole stop-motion sequence wasn't actually even in the script, and I called him afterwards and said, you know, I'm looking to do something. Remember, like, the old Sesame Streets where they used to do the stop-motion sliding around on the grass?
Mm.
He said, you know, I've never heard of anything being attempted like that, but sounds like it'll work. Let's do it. You know, he was excited by it and was willing to sit crouched behind a furnace for 10 hours. And, you know, I can't say enough about Chris. He really is a genius who saved our movie.
Hmm. Very kind words indeed.
And well deserved.
I got another question. First, I got a favor, if it's okay with everybody. Piri Tio, could you please tell Marie Lynn a joke so she'll get him? Just
She stepped out for a second.
Ouch, I bet she did step out for good.
Yeah, she's like, I'm out. Do you guys take the blog seriously in the podcast? When you guys hear your movie, do you take it seriously?
Yeah. All right, come on, questions.
No, I think...
That is a question.
I think, James, what did you ask?
Do you take our word serious? I mean, when you see your movie being discussed by one of us, say, any podcast, any website, do you think of us as, you know, like, journalists? I mean, or do you think of us just as just nobodies?
No, I don't see you guys as nobodies, that's for sure. I mean, I respect what you guys are doing for us filmmakers and all that. But at the same time, I also respect the fact that, you know, we can be who we are without having any, you know, trying to play any political, you know, angle over what, you know, what's right to say, what's wrong to say. Yeah, granted, there are wrong things to say, but I feel like we can be more candid with ourselves, with you guys, and I think that's what lures me back, you know, every now and then, is just knowing that, you know, I can come by, and even just before, like, a interview with you guys, you know, I can say, hey, Chris, or hey, James, I do want to talk about something here that I've never been able to talk about before. Mm-hmm. And you guys will actually, you know, let me speak my mind, and I'm sure you guys give it to the rest of the filmmakers as well, which is a refreshing change because there is no political angle that you guys have on your website. And, you know, your main focus is on, you know, celebrating the hard work that we put in, which is completely, completely flattering for all of us. And I hope I can speak for everybody here as well.
Well, and isn't that part of what David touched on, though, is this new wave, this new approach is kind of this connection that all of you maintain with the community, the fans.
Yeah, I just to keep that going, I agree. I think that this is an exciting new relationship. And you know, James, you're on the DVD cover of my movie. I've got it sitting here now with your name on it. So we obviously respect you enough to put it there.
No, I'm not saying just me. I'm saying everybody in general. Just, do we have too much freedom? Do we tear your movies apart too much?
Look, you know, everyone's got the right to say what they want to say.
I really don't.
Okay, wait, we're kind of talking over everybody. Perry, did you want to chime in with something?
Yeah, I don't feel that. I think you guys need to, you know, don't be insecure about yourself, man. You guys are awesome. I think, you know, just do what you guys are doing. You obviously did something right by having, you know, Chris, CM, Greg, James, and David all here with us. And you know, if you guys are questioning yourself, I think it's the wrong thing, man. Whatever you guys have been doing, it's obviously right because we're all here, mm-hmm. Period.
I agree.
If I gotta put the film in the hands one at a time, goddamn, that will.
Whoa, it's getting clusterfucked over here. I mean, I'll just chime in real quick with that though. You know, I don't really have that concern because I'm not really too worried about how any one feels about me or what I do. The relationships that I've built with the people that are sitting down here right now. And James will attest to this. I mean, James, you and I went through a really rough period before we kind of got to the point that we're at right now. And I don't really worry too much about what people think of me as a blogger or a podcaster. I worry more about how you feel about me as a person. And worry is the wrong word. My primary concern is to interact with you as a human being and not as a blogger.
It's a beautiful thing, Chris.
I just feel there's so many doing it, though. I mean, what separates A from B? Because everybody seems to have an opinion, and nobody's opinion is really, you know, some people are hateful.
Nothing separates it. It's just where we're at. We're here right now, too. Mm-hmm.
You know what? I can just tell you one thing, though. One thing that I find separates a good interview from a bad interview is whether or not I can cut and paste an answer from, like, interviews I've done before. Mm. And I have to say, DePaulo, it took me 3 hours to answer your interview, man. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those were some in-depth questions, and there was no cutting and pasting. Mm. So, you know, it's, everybody can answer, you know, ask, like, the regular questions, and the whole freedom and the whole beauty of, you know, the horror online community is that you can really get into some personal and strange territory than questions that you would never get on Entertainment Tonight, for example.
Well, and I think the beautiful thing about the ease of access and, you know, creating a website, creating a blog, the beautiful thing about that is that if, you know, a good number of people feel empowered enough to do that and feel part of the community enough and feel as though their voices need to be heard or they want their voice to be heard. It's not really about whether one or two make a bigger noise than the other. It's about, you know, now we have a bigger network to inform the rest of the community about what's going on.
I just want to see James's review on The Orphan Killer. I really do.
Marcus.
I laid down a challenge. If his movie's as good as he says it is, I quit internet altogether.
Mm. Send him the.
But I don't think it's going to suck. That movie's going to suck so bad.
Don't make that kind of bet.
Well, the way he acts and talks to me, it's going to suck.
Well, but you also said if it's an 11 out of 10, so I don't think we have to.
I'll give him an 8. If it's an 8 out of 10, I quit.
You're a piece of shit. I'm gonna.
If it's a 5 out of 10, I quit.
Well, send it my way. I'll give it a 9.
Well.
Fan.
Well, and the fun thing is you know, CM Downs with Fetch. I mean, I got in contact with him through Ashlyn Yenny. You know, I talked to her and interviewed her at a convention, and you know,
screener.
You know, Chris Longpigs, that was through James, and you know, Greg with Dawning, Gray over at Dark Hours. I was listening to his podcast, and that prompted me to contact you.
Nice.
You know, and it's just a beautiful network. And, you know, Greg can speak to that, too. I mean, that's exactly how our relationship was built and these interviews came about, yes?
Yeah, I mean, anybody who asked me to review the film, I was like, hey, thanks, man, sure. And then they'd write a bad review, and then I'd write them, you know, like people who didn't like it. I'd write that email, and I'd say, you know, thanks for taking the time to watch the movie. Sorry you didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And move on. And, you know, everyone, you know, things start. It's just like the festivals. You know, it's all so connected that, you know, once you start getting in one, they start, you know, things start to overflow and other people start to hear it and they ask for it. And that's key. You know, that's key to building up some sort of momentum.
Mm.
The bloggers, I mean, for us, at the end of the day, the bloggers probably had more to do with Dawning getting picked up for distribution than a lot of things, you know, outside the film itself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I agree.
Let's go around the horn here, and talk about, you know, what's coming up. I know, I want Perry, I guess his agent has been texting him while we've been on here, and, he has a previous engagement to attend to, but I want to kind of talk about some of these, you know, next steps. Perry, let's throw out a little bit about your next project that you're working on right now.
I'm working on Dead Inside. Can you hear me?
Like robotic. David, you took a little break and you were doing some writing, getting away. Anything you can share with us about even like maybe some of the context of your next project?
It's definitely still within a family situation.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing on, I think, with the similar style, if you like, from,
mm-hmm.
but don't really want to reveal a hell of a lot at the moment, but let's just say that Visitor Q is a film that I'm quite interested in.
Oh, dear God, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And that certainly was heavily rooted in a certain type of family dynamic.
That's right.
Very nice.
There's also a Pasolini film that has a similar theme.
Hmm. Interesting. I can honestly say after James turned me on to you and I got my copy of Wound, it certainly thrills me to hear that you're going to be staying within the family dynamic, so to speak. Was it a productive writing retreat?
Yeah, it was very relaxing.
Good. Good deal.
How did the DVD sales do in New Zealand?
Oh, well, they're going out. But again, thanks to, you know, I think that the whole horror blog thing is fantastic, and there's room for everyone, and it's about growing together. And as you said, Chris Conduit, it's about the humans here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I enjoy talking to Mr. DiPaolo in Mobile. It's not just about, you know, pushing the film. It's the fact that there's, like-minded that are enthusiastic about cinema. Mm-hmm. That's the common denominator of all of us here.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about, okay, well, let's see if we can get Perry back talking about Dead Inside. Do you still sound like a robot, or?
Do I?
No, you don't. Okay.
Well, Dead Inside is my second project shooting May. Second horror project, actually, shooting in May. And I'm definitely, well, Necromancer has been a more films, Hellraiser kind of artistic kind of film. Dead Inside is definitely going to be more along the lines on, you know, the J-horror Ringu kind of film that actually influenced my late teens when I was growing up. And I kind of want to tackle a different aspect of the horror. And with, you know, while trying to stay away from the typical slasher genre in horror films, because I feel like, you know, in anticipation at this point in my life and career than I am with the payoff, which is, you know, what slasher films are.
So
slasher films, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, and one of the things that we had discussed before is that you're really going to try to kind of delve into and explore kind of the inner workings of the possibly tortured adolescent being.
Yes. And I think what really got me interested in the project, and I think I talked to you about this a long, long time ago, and, you know, I like the idea of, you know, horror actually telling a message that, you know, that comedy drama films cannot. In which case, I picked up Dead Inside because it had really strong themes on bullying and how that can have an adverse effects not only on the victims but on the people around them. And I really enjoyed that message, and I feel that a horror film can impart this message stronger than, say, a comedy film where they kind of treat the topic of bullying too much of a joke. I feel that I can really explore a thematic message behind it.
Well, I one thing that's that you're doing that's really cool is, as you always do, keeping the fans in the loop. So there's a lot of cool stuff that you do on Facebook on your personal page, and then also over at the page for Dead Inside. So if anybody's not checking that out already, definitely do, because your updates on there are really fun and interesting. So that's something to look forward to for sure. How about you, Greg? You know, as we talked about, Dawning's, you know, going ahead here. I know it's a stupid question to ask. You're writing, yes?
Well, not right now. I'm kind of a lazy asshole right now. But I have five feature scripts written that I occasionally go back and touch up as far as rewrites. And then I have like four or five outlines that, I don't know, once my brain is saturated enough thinking about them, I'll probably sit down in front of the computer and start typing them. But so I don't know what project will happen next. I'm from a producer perspective, I have a couple ideas that I'm leaning toward, but I'm just kind of waiting to see how things kind of play out over the next little bit, 6 months, and just keep at the writing thing.
And you'll keep us posted.
Yeah, maybe. No,
yeah, fuck off. All right, we're done with Greg. CM Downs. You know, we've gotten a little news about, you know, some headway with Fetch here. We know you're busting your ass. We were over in Hawaii, you know, doing what you had to do. Where are you at right now for your next step?
Right now, I mean, you know, the deal is inked with the sales agents, and hopefully, you know, I get really good news here soon. And, you know, other things I can't go into at the minute, but like, we just shot a piece, we shot for 3 days straight and wrapped it. Hard wrap was midnight, and I was on a plane at, you know, 6:15, and editing while I was out there, which is very kind of like Wes Craven-esque meets like The Thing is what I just shot. Very happy, full body separation. That makes me happy. But so around that, I'm working with one of the executive producers of Repo and the Genetic Opera on a screenplay right now. So that's been cranking away on that.
Well, we certainly wish you the best with that.
I'm hoping,
sir.
I'm hoping that goes, Chris.
well, we talked about you know, Long Pigs 2 and Danny DeVito. Chris, is there anything else you might want to add about future projects, what's coming up, or
Yeah, I mean, we've got Long Pigs. I just want to say as well that it's going to hopefully be a very horror community involved project. We're looking for it to be an interactive project, and, you know, a good portion of it is about the fans, some of them a little eccentric and some of them maybe a little devoted, who, you know, are online. So we're looking to have fun with that. Anthony's putting out a cookbook, finally, from
very cool
prison. So that's going to be the sort of the first launching point. And, you know, aside from that, Nathan's got a couple shorts that he's doing as well. And, you know, like any other filmmaker, we have 100 stories we want to tell. But that's next on the horizon.
Just keep on keeping on, huh?
Right on, man. And thanks for passing on those DVDs. You are the conduit.
Rodleen.
Yes. Hello. Thank you.
I know. I know you've got always have 5 or 6 balls in the air that you're juggling, but are you getting back in front of the camera?
Well, I have a possible project later this year with a director named Brooke Roberts, and I've worked with Lewis Teague with a show that's coming out called Charlotta T.S. I play a role in that show. I don't know how it's going to come out. It might come out like it might be an internet series or something.
Oh, okay.
But, and I'm just constantly creating music and taking photographs, and I put everything up on my website on www.getsick.com. That's GETSIC.com.
Check out the photography. It's insane.
Hey, Rodleen, you forgot to mention it's PG. I think that's the best.
PG-13.
Yeah, PG-13, actually.
Very nice. Okay, let's hit Adam and keep going.
I am currently deep in Jonas Land. I have a rough cut. It's 1 hour and 41 minutes. I'm probably going to trim a little back. And it's my follow-up film to The Bunny Game. It's a counterbalance film that I made, like, because after The Bunny edit, I was completely drained and kind of lifeless and needed to do something that was just the opposite. And it ties in with The Bunny Game. There's a small – Jonas actually makes a small appearance in the Bunny Game. So in some ways you're following, you know, a very minor character 18 to 20 months down the road from where we saw him in The Bunny Game. So – a loose sequel of sorts, and like really not in any way, shape, or form, but totally, you know, totally different film. Character study, something that I wanted to make with my friend Greg that just worked. It's something that we just, it's the film, it's what we made. So we just went and did it, and we'll have probably it wrapped up in May. Greg's coming out to do the voiceover. There's some voiceover stuff in it, so he's coming out in May to record that, and I'm going to finish up the cut this month.
Excellent. I'm actually really excited for this because I want to see into the mind of this man for sure.
Yeah, well, it's what happened, like sort of like with Rodleen. The same level of commitment, like to letting manifest is like just a period in Greg's life. You know, Greg did something very similar, you know. Greg and I were actually working on, this whole Jonas film was something that we were working on simultaneously when I started shooting with Rodleen years ago. So they kind of evolved at the same time, and they were two really different films. And before Renfro, there really was this film that Rodleen and I almost made. It was with Greg, it was with Jonas, and it was the film that was never made. So this is much later, I guess, on a linear timeline. This would be much later down the line from both films.
Excellent. Marie, you still there?
I'm still here, yeah.
So what's going on with you down the line here? What can we look forward to?
Oh, my goodness gracious. I have so many things going on right now. Thing that's coming out for me is a movie called Photographic.
Mm-hmm.
I play a cameo role similar to what I Oscar over. It is a significant role, kind of goes throughout the entire film. Mm-hmm. After that, we are probably going to finish the Call Girl feature film, which I'm starring in, and then we're going to go into the web series, which is a Friday the 13th tribute called The Obsession. Mm-hmm. That we're going to go into production in April or May, where I do have a significant character. After that, we do have a couple other things lined up. I'm possibly going to be involved in a vampire feature film where I'm co-starring. It's kind of a radical, crazy film, but it's a love story. And then as far as the next thing after that is Burlesque Massacre 2, where I...
Good Lord, woman, don't you sleep? Jeez.
Charlie Sheen.
Christ.
Never sleep, baby.
Well,
never.
The one time that she was going to sleep, now she's going to see freaking The Bunny Game.
There you go. I'm going to go see The Bunny Game. I'm so excited.
You have to. You really have to. Yeah.
It was in it, and I'm thrilled to see it.
Amazing.
I'm excited to meet the wonderful stars and the creators of the film. I intend to cancel all my plans for that evening.
Well, I'll just let you know, Marie, after you see The Bunny Game, you'll have to hug Rodline again just to reassure yourself that she is alive.
If she's there, baby, I will hug her like crazy.
Oh, look, girl pile is coming up.
Are you going to be there, babe? You're going to be there? I will hug you.
Yeah. I'll look forward to that hug.
No, what I'm saying, Marie, is you'll feel as though you need to hug her because you're going to need to make sure that she's actually still there.
Poor, wonderful, amazing actress. This poor girl. I already feel for her. I haven't even seen it, but I already feel like she's gone through crazy, crazy stuff. And I feel for her, my friend. I've gone through
I'm actually really tough.
Good. That's amazing. I'm going to support you.
Break it up, ladies. Mr. DiPaolo, what do you have coming up for us?
Well, today's my mom's birthday, so happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Instead of telling you guys what I got coming up, I'd like to do some thank yous, if that's okay.
You have the floor, sir.
Thank you. First off, Chris Power. I mean, without Chris Power, I wouldn't have been shit. That's the truth. Chris is awesome. Adam Ray Meyer, one of my best friends. Me and him just go back and forth, but I love Adam. The press kit for Bunny Game is unreal. It is so fucking amazing. It's unreal. David Blythe put me on the cover to his movie. Thank you. He fought and fought and fought to get me on that cover, and they refused and refused. And he just caved. He wouldn't cave in, and he did it for me, and I thank you. And, man, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Marie Lynn is probably one of the funnest interviews I've ever done because Marie is just so goofy and so fun. And she's dating Charlie Sheen, but that's personal.
Aw, thank you.
And Rodline, of course, is awesome. I love Rodline. She is God to the 10th degree, and women in film are so fucking stupid for not recognizing her. Rodline is the fucking shit. She is incredible. CM Downs, I want to see your fucking movie. Mail it, please, right now. And Cinema Head Cheese, thank you for always letting me be me. And Fear Shot Mike, thank you from the bottom of my heart for letting me do this. And my wife, I love you, and you're the girl of my dreams, and you're awesome. And thank you.
Did you mention Perry or Greg?
Oh, yeah, Piri Teo. I forgot. Sorry.
I haven't seen The Dawning,
so I can't say anything about Dawning. I haven't seen it.
But you can maybe say something about Greg.
I can say something about Piri first. Necromentia is what Hellraiser should have been. That piece of shit Hellraiser is out right now is awful. Piri Teo is just so fucking incredible. What a fucking talent. I love Piri. Piri's good people.
Thank you. Woo! I love you.
Yeah,
love
baby.
You. Fuck up now. Shut up. Shut up, Piri. And I've heard so much about The Dawning. Chris Conduit, Michelle Barkley went on and on about The Dawning, how awesome it is. And if they're saying The Dawning's awesome, that's all I need to know. Anthony McAllister's awesome. I forgot Anthony. Jen and Sylvia Soska, who aren't here, are incredible. I mean, Chris D'Annunzio of Livestock, awesome. These people are fucking amazing. You need to see these fucking movies, people. Go see Bunny Game. Go tell Adam, say, you're a sellout. I want to see your movie.
And goddamn, I couldn't have said it better myself.
Thank you for this chance, Chris Conduit. Thank you guys for letting me do it twice. I love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
For Chris Power, Perry Teo, CM Downs, Rodleen Getzik, Marie Lynn, Greg Holtgrew, James DiPaolo, David Blythe, and Adam Raymeyer. I am Chris Conduit. That was the MegaCast, and take good care. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. We'll talk to you again.